My name is Peter. I have a pretty close relationship to radio. I live in the Fraser Valley, and I'm starting up a community campus radio station called Civil Radio. Right now I have a two-hour radical radio show on Wednesdays. I really think that radio, a community-based radio, is really effective at connecting different parts of the community, especially when other forms of mass media are really disconnected from the community. So I think it's something easy that we can take over, be able to communicate with the people that we are neighbors and get back in touch with the people that we live and work with.
My name is Ron, and I'm involved with a pirate radio station in some mysterious location that some of you know nearby. I'm also putting together a book on pirate radio in Canada called Islands of Resistance. It's an anthology of different writing, so I'm interested if any of you would like to be part of that book. That's also a possibility. Maybe even this interview or this recorded thing can be transcribed, who knows.
I'm Bob. I'm a friend of Ron. I'm from Hornby Island, but I'm not going to say where he's from because he's from a secret place and broadcasts. There is a nascent community radio enterprise on Hornby, but it hasn't got on the air yet, so I'd be interested to hear what people are saying here.
I'm Christian, and I was working on radio for like more than 10 years. I still think that we have to build our autonomous radios because the community radio are also like very monopolized by very reactionary administration councils a lot of times. So to use like in the secret place a radio and like really really appropriate by the community is always the best. And how to spread the information and our feelings to others, and how to share by this medium and not just do a formal spectacle or information entertainment or whatever.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of shit you just say. And also, I would add that for me, important to use the medium of radio in this way of reappropriating it to break it down to at a point so we can enter in more direct communication also. But for me, it's a matter to link or extend from my daily life direct communication to extend it so I can share it with more people.
For me, radio is like pretty new medium or reality. I have some friends who have some experience or who have like introduced me in ways to doing some radio. And I guess it's pretty intimidating for me in ways because of how formal it is sometimes. Things like the taboo around silence, or how you always have to have something to say or not hesitate. I hesitate a lot just in talking, but as much as in a way I think it's interesting to like work on talking more precisely and concisely while doing radio, at the same time like I'm interested in like dismantling the norms of radio, and that like if I do some content or project, that there's place for hesitation and for emotions, and not just like it'd be something that's reserved to an elite of people who know how to express themselves correctly.
Yeah, and you hit a good point because we, you know, when you listen to commercial radio, it's so slick and it's polished and it's perfect. But I've had experience similar to yourself on campus community radio, and it was well known that you could stuff up and make mistakes, and it really didn't matter. And you learn, you develop your confidence, and I just love the intimacy of radio. I can picture the people out there. Like, I've done a radio show at a campus station, an Australian music show, and it was my way of bringing culture from my country, from the other side of the world, to here. And I try actually not to talk too much because I want to let the music speak for itself. You know, I mean, I got stuff to say, but I'd rather let culture and music really music's the ultimate connector, I think. It's the most democratic sort of thing there is, that anyone can listen to it and relate to it and elicit feelings from it. So, yeah, I just think radio is wonderful.
The people I work with don't often want to build a democratic station, and they are often very open to having corporate aspects to the running of the station. So that's always a struggle. And then in setting up the station, like being a kind of community co-op station and not being a pirate station, there's a lot of issues with government and private corporations that it's very difficult to work with.
I am a musician, and I've had connection with both community and pirate radio as a guest, I suppose. And I've found, like, with pirate radio, there's so much freedom, so much liberty to do whatever you need to do. It's like a blank canvas. And there's so much romanticism attached to it as well, too. This sound is traveling through the air and just sending it out there, and anyone can hear it. And then I've also had relationship with those who've had shows on community radio. And in the community radio, when it's a good council, a good group of people, it's really, really effective because everyone's heart is in the right place. And then when you have the influence of one person, just one person on council, who doesn't really like the freedom that people are trying to extend, it's amazing how quick it can change. And so with my friends who've had stations on a community, like university radio, there was a shift. And when we were able to access that radio and the radio waves, it's really liberating. It's really fun. And it is amazing how music can come across. And just people engage, and people love to hear people converse about fascinating topics. But that shift took place, and then that door came down. And now it's not an accessible way of communicating. And the idea of community is lost. So that's why there can be a balance within community radio and pirate radio. It's almost like they're sisters, and when one can achieve what the other needs to, they can maybe work in tandem.
I had a question for you. When you were speaking about democratic structures,
yeah,
in which you would like to work,
I mean,
I would like to know more about.
In terms of the management of the station and the people who work in the station and produce content and shows for the station, the relationships aren't always equal. Some people get to make all the important decisions, and other people just carry out tasks that aren't as important.
Obviously hierarchical.
Yes, yeah. And just having a board structure, and there's not that much communication with the membership or involvement, for that matter. That's always frustrating.
What will be the contrary?
Well, I
like on a practical level.
Well, I'm not sure exactly, but we're not as open as I would like.
It's through with funding.
Yes.
It's always where the money comes from, and it's pulling the strings.
That's the, yeah. It's expensive.
Well, you're getting permission to use that space in air.
Yeah.
So somebody's going to create boundaries for you.
Yeah.
And they're going to... It's easy to vilify when you have that position of power.
There's the administration, and there's the CRTC. There is the corporate interest. So it's very... I would like to hear more about your experiences with pirate radio.
Well, in terms of the expenses you're talking about, our operating costs are $35 a month. So that's easily enough to raise. In fact, on this mysterious island that we have the station, there is a recycling operation for the whole island, and different community organizations have bins, and you can put your bottles in those bins, and the organization gets the money. Everybody on the island knows we're totally illegal, but we have a bin, just like everybody else, and we make our $35 a month by the fact that we have a lot of beer drinkers, I guess, that want to support our project. So, you know, money's not an issue. When it first came up, people were saying at one point, well, we should do, like, local advertising, and we could make money that way. But, you know, we really didn't need to do that, and we didn't want to do advertising. We wanted to be commercial-free. And on a small island, if, you know, you're advertising the bakery, for example, everybody knows where the bakery is and what they have. So, you know, it's really, what's the point of advertising it? Or if you're advertising someone who has a particular service that they do, then if that person's on the air getting an advertising kind of slot, and all the other people who provide the same service are not getting that same kind of airplay, then there's resentment. So we didn't want any part of the commercial end of it. And we figured out this way to do what we need to do in terms of our monthly expenses. If we need something more, most of our equipment is donated, equipment that we've gotten either donated or cheap. And if we need something to be replaced or some additional expense comes up, we'll have a dance, and you know, people on the station who are DJs will do the dance, and we'll make it into a fundraiser, or we'll do a dinner, and you know, a dinner and maybe a dance after that. So I mean, it's all grassroots fundraising, totally.
What about the content?
Totally free. Everybody is free to do whatever they want on their show, and if anybody complains, they have to complain to the person who's doing the show. It's not a policy on the radio. So, and since we see each other a lot, you know, you'll see the person who did the show at the general store, and you'll say, hey, I didn't like what you did there. I really loved what you did there. And you get direct feedback. It's like, it's not like, obviously we're not doing marketing research surveys or anything that they do in community radio and licensed community radio to or the kind of pledge drives. We don't do anything like pledge drives. It's basically all done, you know, like, person to person, pretty much. It's not impersonal. I'm not totally down on community radio. I think some good things happen on community radio, but I'm much more interested in autonomous and pirate radio.
In your book, do you talk about the pirate radios in the cities also, probably?
Yes.
Do you think it can like be built like on a permanent level?
Well, not all the stations are like ours that are in the book. I mean, our station is like a community-based station, but there's one of the editors of the book does temporary autonomous radio. You might know Marion. And her station is a mobile station, and she goes around and sets up her station in various locations. In the cities, there are, you know, some that come and go in urban areas and move around. I mean, it doesn't have to be a permanent kind of fixture. What we do is, you know, it sort of has this community base to it. And if that works for us in our community, our island, you know, it's like island radio, basically. And we've just gone, just recently, within the last month, there is now a connection to doing web radio in addition to our regular pirate broadcasts. And so that gets out to a lot more people than just the island. Personally, I'm not interested in that myself, and I don't do that. But every programmer has, you know, the freedom to do that if they want to. And the reason I'm not interested in it is because I think it takes away from the community base. You start thinking of your audience as not just the locality that you're broadcasting in, but the world. And your uncle somewhere in Montreal, or your, you know, brother who lives in Iran, or whatever, or his sister. So it doesn't interest me at all to do that, but we have a decision-making process that is open to everybody's input, and we make, you know, consensus decisions, and what we arrived at is that it should be available to the people who want to do it, and so that's what we do.
You're also somebody that participated to that project?
No, I live on a different island.
But you've been on the air.
Oh, I have been.
I had the experience of being on the air and having my work produced on the air, both in pirate radio and community radio. And obviously community radio, there's more of it. Well, I had both ones. I had to be there at a certain time. It's not like it's completely, you know, whatever you want to do. And everybody, the pirate radio is free, but it's still, you have to have a schedule for it too. And people relate to that, and they tune into it. So it's not like we're just going on the air because the revolution's here or something, or there is that kind of... Are they doing that in Iran right now?
I don't know what they're doing in Iran, but I wanted to respond to something you said, Bob. There are scheduled shows on our station, but there are also unscheduled shows. So you could tune in at any time, and you might hear something that's not on the schedule. But the scheduled shows are available for people who want to, you know, tune in at a particular time. They know what they're going to get.
I don't know what other comparisons. I guess community radio, like co-op radio, is that kind of what you're talking about? Co-op radio. That was more like a regular radio station, and there's equipment, and there's a division of labor, schedules, but you've got schedules too. And I still found it, though, people are just the people that you know. They're not just people that come in to do a job. They are people from the community. And most of the people that work at the Co-op Radio are involved in the issues outside of the radio station. I think that's one of the big differences to commercial radio. The only people that are involved in the issues are the ones that come in as guests. But the community radio, the one that what I've seen, the people are also involved in the issue that are the technicians, the producers, and also the guests. And then on community, pirate radio, in my limited experience of one, it's even more that way. So they're all, I enjoyed them all as an experience.
There's a certain thrill to pirate radio, though. Come on. That's part of it.
Well, when you're in a cow pasture there and you have to be led blindfolded to the spot and sign a release, and they take a vial of your blood and everything to make sure, and they have a DNA sample, so in case you do spill anything, they'll be able to chase you down. That is, that's the difference.
You could be naked on the radio.
Does everybody have something they're working on, or why don't they tell us if they're trying to do something? You guys got something that you're aiming to do?
My relationship to radio is largely as an artist and a musician, and so I like it as an art medium as well as educational medium, and so I kind of bridge both worlds. And like, I've done shows where somebody's broadcasting from the show, and then there's radios in and around the area, and like small, like these, you can get, you know, our fellow artist who has these small transmitters, it can have like a fair distance, but it's so temporary. That's what's really fun about it too, is it's very changeable. Like, that's what a community radio is like. Its location is there. But as an art medium, your location can be anywhere. You could be broadcasting from a train station. You could be broadcasting from your house. And there's a lot of beauty to that form as well too, because then you have the audio landscape, which I'm very fascinated with.
Sorry, I have another question on how pirate radio tries to evade the authorities in the state, and how you best achieve that.
Is that for everybody?
That's for everybody. Who has everyone?
Evading the authorities, my life's work. Let's see. Okay, so some pirate radio stations are seeking to interfere with commercial broadcast. That's why they're doing it. We're not doing that. If you do that, you're, of course, in much more jeopardy of getting busted. The way that that we operate is we're finding a blank spot on the dial that isn't being used, and we're using it. We're using it illegally. We're not licensed. We're not going through that process. Basically, the only way that the government comes in on this, it typically, and that's changing, and I'll talk about that at the end, is that it's a complaint-driven process. So the CRTC gets a complaint from somebody. It could be an individual who doesn't like the programming. It could be somebody from the radio industry who feels you have no right to be on the air, and then they're obligated to investigate. But the CRTC has typically not been out there trying to locate stations and bust them. They only operate if there's a complaint. However, for all the fans we have here of the Olympics has changed all that. They now have the CRTC monitoring everywhere once a month that the Olympics are going to be happening. So where we're located is some of the things are happening in that region. And so the CRTC, through Industry Canada, which is their enforcement arm, is monitoring the airwaves once a month out of Powell River, which is the nearest place to where our island is. And they picked up our station. And they had never done that before because they'd only been waiting for a complaint. We got wind of it, and that's a long story, and I don't want to say it on the mic. And so we were able to disappear for a while and come back on the air. But we now know that this is going on, and we have to be careful, at least until the thing is over. But, you know, the way these work with the security preparations for the Olympics events is that even when it's over, the event ends, but all the security remains in place. So, you know, it's just one more reason to hate the Olympics, right?
So one thing you would recommend is doing research. You want to know what's going on around the area, what channels are safer than others, and like where you're located, there's water. So there's a water issue of sound.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
Further as well, too, in an urban area, there's a lot of activity.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, sound waves bounce across the water. That's the way they work. So, you know, we're low watt, really. We're like 30 watts at max, and sometimes we're as low as 20. But even though that reaches the whole island, it also bounces across the water. We don't really concern ourselves with that. That's not what we want to do, but in order to reach everybody we want on the island, it inevitably happens. And so we now have to be aware of, you know, this monitoring that's going on, which we never had to deal with before.
But it's good that somebody knows, because that kind of information does need to be shared.
Yeah, we have friends in the right places.
The fact that they have no radio, like commercial radios around, it makes it like more easy to stay there.
Oh, sure, but we do actually. We have, like, because they're super high power stations. And they're just booming out there, right? So we thought of switching frequencies to a new spot on the dial when we heard about this, you know, sort of fact that they'd found us. But there really isn't another good place on the dial that isn't going to interfere with another radio station. We have a real sweet spot right now, and so we want to keep it. We've lowered the wattage. And we're testing how low we can get it and still reach everybody on the island. And so that's what we're doing now. We're also adjusting the antenna on a high place on the island. And the antenna basically is a unidirectional antenna, and it's pointing towards where they're doing the monitoring. So we're getting a new antenna actually we have an omnidirectional, and we thought of getting a unidirectional, but then we'd lose part of the island. So we're now going to get this figure 8, which is a bidirectional antenna, and hopefully that'll improve our situation as well. So there are all these little things you can do, you know, once you realize what's happening. But, you know, we're only dealing with the Olympics here in BC. If we're talking about pirate radio in Canada as a whole, they're not monitoring, you know, in the way they are right here in this region. So in the rest of Canada, it's still complaint-driven, and they don't have the staff on the CRTC to go out there looking. They don't have the legal mandate to do that. Legally, they're expected to investigate complaints, and that's all they do.
Can you explain a bit what is the CRTC? I don't know what it is.
Okay, it's... I'm from the States originally, where I used to do pirate radio and did a book down there about pirate radio in the States, and it's like the FCC in the States. In the States, it's the Federal Communications Commission, and in Canada, it's the, what does it stand for, the Canadian Radio, Television, Telecommunications, something like that. And basically, they're mandated to regulate the airwaves, and if you want to get a license, like if you're a licensed community station, they have to approve it, and you go through this process. They even have these developmental licenses now for low-power radio. But, again, you have to go through this licensing process, and Hornby, where Bob is located, has been going through this process for 8 years now. We went through, less than a year when we were on the air, just getting our shit together. It took us a year to do that. But we didn't have to get any licensing approval. And so, you know, the thing is, even when you get approved as a low-watt radio station, you get a developmental license, they call it, in these low-watt cases, not in the case of something like co-op radio, but low-watt stations. And it has to be renewed in 5 years, and they reevaluate you to see if they want to give you the license, the full license in 5 years. So it's a cumbersome and expensive process that we don't want any part of. But the CRTC is where the licensing happens. The complaint is made to the CRTC. Industry Canada is their enforcement arm. They're the ones who come out with the triangulator on top of their van and find you. And they can find you if they want to find you. And if they have enough notice.
Not only they have to renew like 5 years, but they also like close your station any time if they have complaints. So it's like huge. And a lot of administration council will use this pretext to fire your programs because they are supposed to be afraid of this state legislation and state institution. And so it's like a key organization to understand how the legitimate the reaction in the also in the community radios. A lot of people want to follow the rules, but like very by the book. And they use this pretext to fire you or to struggle against you. And
like, what are their standards or what are their interests in like accepting a certain content or station and not another one? Do they get paid or?
Control. They have language regulations, like profanity isn't allowed.
Fuck that shit. What about, I'm thinking more of their interest as, is that like a government organization? Because like, why, for example, are there so much, many more crappy commercial radio stations that are approved and on the air?
They are controlled by a lot of corporations, have a lot of influence. They're appointed to, from politicians appoint them. So they're connected. They are supposed to watch the corporations, but they end up just doing what they want. And it's a lot harder for people, non-profits, to do anything because we're not a priority.
So it seems almost like it's a morality squad as well, too, because you can be religious and have a radio show. That's no problem. No problem. But if you want to have something interesting, that seems to be a little bit more sticky.
And you can't say things against the state or anything like that.
Yeah, more about politics.
Yeah.
Like, our mandate is to defend the voice of the voiceless, the people not speaking anywhere else than in those stations, and also to defend, very particular interests, like class interests, like to defend, to offer the mic to the poor, to defend their position on the society, and they defend the struggles, the poor, the immigrants, and whatever. It's on the same times, if you understand that the full system is against the immigrants and against the poor and you want to try to say that you have to find other tools to fight the system, but you're completely out of laws, because you cannot say, oh yeah, take the arms and do the insurrection. Because you will be fired. And not only by the radio. Sometimes it's happened by the CRTC, but it's very rare. It's like more a pretext from the administration council to fire people on their stations. And the right wing, not necessarily the right conservative or liberal, but the right wing in the left side are using this a lot. Like in the program training they give in the CFRO, in the Coop Radio, They are very, very clear about the fact that you can swear on the radio.
You can swear.
Yeah, but we are on the downtown east side, and everybody swear on the downtown east side.
The
fuck.
Coop Radio is not the downtown east side.
Yeah, for sure. It's like a very gentrified radio.
For sure. Well, we just had some really sketchy experiences with that place, just to share, that it's really hard to... It's located in the downtown east side, and it's pretty much set up in a way that it's impossible if you don't have a super comfortable lifestyle to actually access having a show. Because recently they've implemented a bunch of new rules and it's a lot of security shit, and it just seems pretty obvious to me that it's because they're scared of the people who live where they're located. So they have fucking hella locks, a bunch of cameras, and then you're not allowed to go in the radio at night if you're not a programmer. But then what happened to us is that we wanted to go in the radio at night because we wanted to work on our demo that we have to submit in order to have a show to be a programmer. And we don't have enough material to do this in another location. So then it's it's pretty much set up so that if you're not already upper class or some level of privilege, then you can't really be there, and it's so tragic. There's this one person who's I see all the time doing volunteer work at this radio station, but what was never proposed to have his say on the radio, and The content is really depressing.
Like, there's a massive sweep happening, a huge cleanup taking place in downtown Eastside, that it would make sense that they would go straight to the source of the communique. So I'm wondering if there might be all kinds of backroom agreements that are affecting this as well, too. And it's only going to get worse. So in terms of co-op radio, I don't think that would be a viable source for the stuff that I imagine you're trying to communicate as well, too. It's not probably a safe venue. So that might be another factor to put into whether or not to do community or pirate radio. And even still with pirate radio, there are ears. Like, just be really conscientious of that as well, too.
In that sense, they pick their side. Like, it's very politic, their choice. Like, they participate in the gentrification of the neighborhood and decide to take it.
Also, not that I listen to so many of the shows, but I've just noticed a lot of leftist content, and that's something that's really present in the downtown east side, not just in co-op radio, just people who maybe come from other neighborhoods and then go there with a charity kind of approach. To be like, there's social injustice, we have to do something, we have to organize these people. So there's some content that will talk about injustice or bad stuff happening, but it's very distanced.
Their new show, the morning show, is completely controlled by one man who is Marxist-Leninist and very centralized. Yeah. In his power. And he's doing sometimes great radio, because I think he's a good host, but in the way he's doing radio, it's just put out all the people who can do radio or reappropriate the program. And it's supposed to be a community program. So.
And it's not some of the shows out there, the content is just I can't see how it would be of interest to people from the downtown Eastside who are the closer to there. You know, there's a whole hour show about yoga. And it's who can pay for fucking yoga?
The woman who make this program, who continue to make this program, promote seminar for yoga for at $300 each weekend. So who in the downtown Eastside can afford this? Then they cannot afford a house or an apartment or whatever.
I'm not going to defend co-op radio, but it's a fact that co-op radio is not a downtown east side radio station. It's for the whole of the lower mainland, and there are a few shows for the downtown east side, but there's many other people that listen to it and many other interests. I'm not defending $300 yoga programs or anything like that, but it was never set up and never originated just to be for one little neighborhood, because there's 10,000 people in the downtown east side and there's 2 million in greater Vancouver, so there's a lot more people than just our neighborhood. That obviously we emphasize this, and this is the most important thing to us, but I think it's important it goes out to all these other places to use it. I mean, it's just like using the commercial stations. Pirate Station has a certain number of listeners, the next level up has more, and so on. It's all the way up. It's the same old story, ripping off the media, the mass media, as much as we can. So I agree with everything that's being said, but with that, there's still ways we can use it if we are smart and know how to use the media. And the same with co-op radio. Most of their listeners are not in the downtown east side, and they definitely don't focus on that as their one thing. But they do have a few shows that are downtown east side oriented.
I feel their politics are discriminatory, you know? Even if it's so there are shows that will report Native history or storytelling from downtown, people from downtown east side, it's in a way that they will be invited most of the time. And I don't know what you're talking about. I guess Kevin Annett show and Red Eye. I just feel that the politics there discriminate at people normal people from downtown east side, as in average people. I can just see it because just the politics are encouraging an elitist behaving. They're favorizing like that you have education, you're favorizing that so you don't swear, so you're rational, you're not so chaotic. Like, for example, there have been a homeless marathon that like has broadcast through all the Canada and the States too, months ago, and it happened at Co-op Radio that like, you know, we provide of this moment so that in the DTES can like just talk about what's happening there in the context, and like the person that was doing the technique for us, because we don't have the formation and shit, nobody had except this guy. We don't have their formation. Yeah, that's it. Like, we have to pass through their thing. Guy left, man, because it was too chaotic, because it wasn't so like directed, organized, and just all those conventions that like I don't necessarily understand as like, yeah, I did radio before, but it wasn't in an organized place, too. But yeah, I find the party can be discriminatory in the way it favorized like elitist backgrounds or like privileged,
yeah.
And like obviously people not only are like, you know, the undesirable or not even citizens, man. And like I feel that there's a lot to learn about that, man. And I just wanted to talk also about another way of like making radio that I've made in the past, like just with a recorder like that. Like this recorder is like $100, still, but $100, and then you can. This thing is like MP3, so you can like take it off and then plug it in the computer. And there's a website as like Radio for All, where you can like post the shit you do. And if you want to edit it, you can download to Audacity freely on the computer you're in, whatever, if you're on Windows, Linux, or Mac.
Oh no, I was just thinking about that time with the homelessness marathon, that it wasn't in an interview form, and that's one of the things that made the technician leave. And it just seems...
What do you mean interview form?
Oh, well, we were having a conversation with all the people in the studio, and nobody was really, like, saying their name or, like, it wasn't, like, host and guest. It was just, like, kind of everyone talking, and there was, like, 10 people in the studio, and the guy was too overwhelmed, and he, I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, we said to him that, like, we found he was acting like a police. And so he didn't like that, but it was his nerve already. Like, he shut down, like, he stopped the sound, and he put some, like, awkward music there.
Yeah, also, like, what we try to do is, like, giving the mic to the homeless people and not taking the mic for us, like, on every time. We, like, have, like, radio personalities who is always talking in the radio or always interviewing people but always control this radio. So we try to have this possibility to give the mic to the people on the streets and not only taking the mics. And it's also, this homeless marathon is like very gentrified, because a lot of times it's like community organization talking about homelessness, not homeless people talking about their lives. And I think it's very different, because a lot of people involved in community organization are bureaucrats, are coming from the middle class and not from all the big backgrounds of the homeless people. Some are homeless, or was homeless and work, but a lot of people come from the middle class or the upper class and are bureaucrats. And it's not the same to be a bureaucrat working to organize homeless people and to be homeless. And this person is also like very used to do pirate radio, so she have like more this interactive, collective way. And then she say, oh, the show he was making just before was shit, because it was only music and format from very formal interviews, and like the host was taking all the place, and it's absolutely not what we want. And it's clear, because she's not like talking for herself. It's like this homeless is also built on a collective participation, that we decide that we want to take this mic and to give to the people on the street, that they have